Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Jaguars Thursday begins right now.
Welcome into the HananiahAutos.com studios at Everbank Field. J.P. Shadrick with Jeff Loggeman and College Football Hall of Famer Tony Baselli. You can get in. 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Throw 1-800 in front of it if you're out of the area. We're here for the next hour talking about rookie minicamp, the review of last weekend outside of Everbank Field. OTAs coming up, some news from around the league this week as well. And we'll look around the division a little bit, some highlights from each team in the AFC South. Cecil Shorts III scheduled to join us on the phone lines as well. So let's start off with the biggest news of the day, though, of course, Jeff. Our friend Tony Baselli out of USC.
Thank you, Joe.
Is one of 14 players elected to the College Football Hall of Fame announced today.
I think that's awesome, and I told Tony earlier, congratulations. By the way, who are you going in with? What are some of the other names?
I don't know all of them, but Derek Thomas.
Yeah, I got him right here. Stand by.
Yeah, go. Give, there's Willie Rofe, Wesley Walls.
Let's start at the top. Dre Blyde, North Carolina, yep. Defensive back. Tony Baselli, Dave Butts from Purdue. Shane Conlin.
Dave Butts, the old Redskins player?
Yeah.
Man,
tackle.
They're going way back then.
Shane Conlin, linebacker Penn State. Joe Hamilton, quarterback Georgia Tech. John Heward, linebacker from Maine. Darren Nelson, Stanford. Willie Rofe, La Tech. John Sierra from UCLA. Sterling Sharp. Leonard Smith. Derek Thomas from Alabama. LaDainian Tomlinson from TCU. Wesley Walls, the tight end from Ole Miss.
Yeah, Sterling Sharp, I remember him at SC, the other SC, South Carolina. Yep. Was the most dominant college wide receiver that I'd ever seen in person. I mean, he was unbelievable.
Great pro, too.
A great pro. Now, Dave Butts, I grew up as a kid and was a fan of Dave Butts. You know, having grown up in Northern Virginia, the Redskins area, Dave Butts was the biggest man on the planet when you're a kid growing up and seeing the Redskins around town, because at that time, he was way bigger than everybody else in the National Football League. He was, 6'4", 6'5", 300 pounds. Back then, there wasn't a lot of guys that were that big.
See, I was a Derek Thomas kid at Alabama. I was a kid just coming up, late 80s. I have an autograph. Derek Thomas autograph, number 55 at Alabama. He had 27 sacks in one season.
Great player.
In Tuscaloosa.
Great player.
Now, Tony, how did this go down? Did they call you? How long have you known? And what's the process going forward now?
So I found out last week, actually. I think just right before the morning of the show last week. Now,
thanks a lot.
I know you gave me looks like, why didn't you?
You could have allowed us to break news.
Come on now.
I was asked because the press conference was today, not to say anything, so I didn't say anything.
That was your opportunity to get paid.
To get paid. I don't think. Right? Yeah, it'd been a good idea.
Guys, anyway, I'll hold it, but.
I might have missed it. So I found out. They let me know. Today was the press conference. I know there's a big event at the Waldorf in New York
in December. Yes. Big black tie event.
And there's a bunch of things in between. I think some stuff at USC, some different College Hall of Football of Fame events. And they said, I got an email today after they called me and congratulated me again, that they'd be sending out an itinerary of the kind of the year, the process. That goes through from now until December.
Matt Sine and some really good folks at the National Football Foundation will be putting that on. Yes.
Yeah, and I had a question to you guys before we came on here. Because we know that the Pro Football Hall of Fame is in Canton, Ohio.
I heard about that.
I mean, it's a marvelous place to visit, by the way. It really is. All the game's history is there. It's pretty cool. And I know that the Baseball Hall of Fame is up in New York.
Cooperstown, yeah.
And so my question.
Do you know where the Basketball Hall of Fame is?
I have no idea.
Springfield, Mass.
Yeah, Springfield.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so my question to you guys was, where is the College Football Hall of Fame?
I believe it currently is it at South Bend?
That is correct.
And it's moving to Atlanta.
I think at the end of the year.
Maybe. A brand new state-of-the-art facility.
$60 million downtown, right by the aquarium, right by underground and all that.
Yeah, three stories. It's supposed to be very, very cool.
That'll be cool.
Yeah. Over 900 players in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Well, think about all because it's not just Division I. They actually pull from all the different divisions, the best players and what they accomplished from the different divisions. So a lot of players, a lot of teams, a lot of history. I mean, they've been playing college football a lot longer than the NFL. I mean, Yale, Harvard, I mean, back in the 1800s.
That, which you would think that with the College Football Hall of Fame, it would end up somewhere. That's, you
where,
know,
yeah, where, we maybe, talked about it. Where would be the best place?
Where what would be considered the birthplace of college football, JP?
Probably the Northeast somewhere,
Northeast,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like Rutgers or one of those is the
Yale,
the
Harvard,
schools.
I mean, Ivy League. Yeah. But here, the problem with that is not the hotbed of college football any longer. It's the South.
SEC, yeah. And Atlanta has the busiest airport in the world.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go to Atlanta.
Yeah. Sure.
Makes sense, right?
A lot of visitors.
I can't imagine people, though. We got to go see the College Football Hall of Fame.
Before,
if
you're traveling there, something you want to see.
Well, ask a college football kid.
Ask a college football kid. So he's a product of the South, Alabama. They view college football way different than you and I do, Jeff. I mean, you and I are NFL guys.
I grew up as an NFL guy.
So did I. Denver Broncos. College football is so secondary with the Colorado Buffaloes. Now, I love college football, but I'm an NFL guy. I love the NFL. And so it's all about, Canton, and that's why we know about that. But you talk about people in the South.
Big deal.
College football in Alabama and Mississippi and parts of Louisiana and parts of Florida is number one, and the NFL is second.
And I think that's why it's a big deal in Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah, let's do too.
355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Before we move on to Jaguars, we'll finish with Tony Baselli talking the Hall of Fame. Let's go to the phone line. Dave in Mandarin wants to talk about Tony. Dave, what's up?
Hey, man, how y'all doing?
Great. What's up? What's up?
Listen, man, I'm getting a little choked up here, man. I'm a first-time grandpa, been a season ticket holder since day one. My son was 8 years old. We've never missed a game. I'm a brand-new grandpa. We brought
Congratulations.
Our grandson to his first game last year. So now we're third-generation Jaguars. But, Tony, I did a lot of work with the YMCA, Flag Football League, Tony Brackens, Leon Searcy. I could go on and on and on. But, Tony, I've got a few of your autographs. I've got the autograph picture of you holding up the number one jersey. I'll never forget you. I admire you for everything you did. I don't know if you realize what a role model you've been to those kids at the Y and my son and everybody else, Tony. But congratulations, man. And man, I just wish the best for you. And thank you for everything, guys.
Hey, Dave, thank you so much. I mean, listen,
that
means a lot to me. Thank you for the kind words, and congratulations on being a first-time grandpa. And I'll tell you what's probably most exciting of that, three-generation of Jaguar fans.
That's amazing.
Really cool. And the fact that you've been there since the beginning, Dave, with your 8-year-old son and remembering all the good things that this organization has done in the community. Really appreciate it. Make sure you call back another time. It was good to hear from you.
Now, that third generation is very young, but, I mean,
they'll get older.
We've had so many conversations on the show about what it's going to take to build the fan base. And all. I mean,
that's it. It started with that, with his connection with the guy at the YMCA.
Well, I mean,
it's grown.
It takes a lot of things that the team is currently doing right now. You know, you build a team that, is a going to win football games. You try to engage the fans, but then also you can't find a quick fix to what time gives you, and that right there is a perfect example. Third generation Jaguars fan, just born the other day.
Yeah, and I agree. So time's big. I mean, it takes generations to build a strong fan base. Winning obviously helps a lot, but the other thing that I think that Gus has captured, and I give him a lot of credit, and I think other guys will do that in this community. I don't know about you, Jeff, but for the longest time, I heard fans saying, "There's not that guy to connect with." There was Freddie T, but there wasn't who's the upfront guy, and winning plus having that connection, and we as a organization, because it was the first, we are the first guys here, and a lot of that, the organization, the fan base connected with Jeff and I's group, that inaugural group, and Gus has done a great job. Mark Lamping, the way they've organized this thing, and Gus's energy, they got to win, but there's a connection with this, with the fan base again, which is, I think, goes a long way.
Jaguars Thursday, JP Shadrick, Tony Baselli, Jeff Lagerman. Speaking of growing the fan base and winning and getting better on the field, let's talk about rookie minicamp that happened last week. And a little view of that. I know you were there, Jeff,
on Friday.
I was there
Tony,
Saturday.
You were there Saturday. Highlights for both of you. We'll start with you, Jeff,
highlights
on Friday.
To me on Friday, because this was not in the evening on Friday. This was midday. Mm-hmm. The turnout, which I know it was even better on Saturday, but the turnout on Friday was fantastic. And what I saw on Friday is kind of what I kind of expected, you know, because from watching some of those guys on film, college tape, and a lot of people had asked me what was my opinion of Blake Bortles, and I said exactly kind of what I thought it was going to be. Because, you know, he's the central figure that everybody wants to know about. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, I said, I didn't expect a lot in the first day because, I mean, think about it from, you know, a time standpoint of what he's been through. Mm-hmm. You know, working out for teams, the draft, traveling, and all of a sudden they hand you a playbook, and then 5 days later you got to be on the field and execute some of that stuff and then relax and throw the football. It just doesn't happen. You know, and I heard a lot of the other guys on 1010 from earlier in the day, not today, but, you know, the day after, and earlier this week, talk about how they look like he struggled a little bit. Well, of course. I mean, what else do you expect from a young quarterback who walks in the door and gets handed a playbook, and all of a sudden there's also 2,000 fans on Friday, and then what was there, like 6,000 fans on Saturday?
Unreal.
So anyway.
What did you think about Saturday then, Tony?
I echo Jeff's. I mean, the fact that it was a Friday afternoon work day, obviously Saturday is not a work day for most people. It was lined. People lined up past the statue, JP.
It's unbelievable. An hour before the gates opened.
I mean, crazy. I drove up. I was 35 minutes early, and I'm going, did I miss? There's like a free giveaway or something. What did I miss? So that was great. Fans were great. That was exciting. On the field, we got some juice. I mean, in those two receivers.
Okay.
And that was fun to watch. And there's going to be some competition at the wide receiver position with those guys in the building.
Hopefully between those two.
I mean, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Me and Tony watched what was maybe one of the greatest friendly competitions that I've ever seen between Keenan, McCardell, and
That's
Jimmy
right.
Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And it only made them both better. So hopefully Lee and Robinson can maybe develop something similar.
And so that was good. I love what you saw there. The center, I always forget the kid from Virginia.
Blanco.
Luke Boanko.
I didn't know who Jeff was.
He does now.
Luke Boanko. And I say this.
Hey, by the way, did you hear what they did to me? You heard it last week.
I thought it was great. I thought it was very funny. Marquise Lee knows who I was, just for the record. Luke Boanko. You can't tell a lot with just helmets on with the big guys, Jeff.
No.
But what I did see, what I always say is I can tell if a guy can't play.
See how athletic
he is? And you and I always talk about it. I'll say, Jeff, he can't play. You're like, what do you mean? Just watch this. He can't play. Luke Boanko, I don't know how good he'll be, but watching him on the bags and how he drops his hips as he comes off and moves his feet, I was like, kid's got a chance.
He's an athlete.
I mean, that was good. And then Blake Bortles, his throwing was a little bit here or there. A couple wounded ducks.
Well, he's got some ducks.
Yeah, he has some ducks. But
Peyton Manning has some ducks too, guys.
He had some great balls. But what I did like is Blake, and I know there's no pads on. I know there's none of that. But he climbs the pocket naturally. And when people are around him on the ground, they're falling. He kind of he doesn't even look at him. He just slides his feet, steps up, where in the past the natural reaction was to back up or to run sideways. He just kind of glides in there, and if that can be reproduced when it's live, then he has a chance to be really, really, really good. Got to work on his footwork, got to work on his throwing motion.
He's got a lot to work on.
A lot to work on, but I saw some positives.
Defensively, anything stand out, Jeff? Hard to tell.
Chris Smith has some speed.
Telvin Smith has some speed, too.
Telvin Smith looks like a defensive back.
When you see him out there, you go, oh, what position does he play?
He's so skinny.
218, I think.
Yeah, soaking wet.
I'd be surprised if he's 218.
Yeah. And they want him closer to 230, I think, right? They want to put on 225 somewhere in there.
He better start eating with me.
You want him to be at a weight that's, you know, that he can play the game. I mean, it's, you know, it doesn't have to be a certain number. But certainly, you know, 215, 218 is not going to cut it. You know, not with these big offensive linemen in the National Football League.
Jeff,
heat them up.
All I can say is I was sitting there. If I lined up an offensive tackle and I had a backside scoop.
You'd laugh.
And I was going up to the second level and he was there, I'd be like, I can't wait to get up
there. The only thing is.
Because it's going to be a lot of fun I get my hands on you.
But getting to that second level, sometimes he may not be there. He may already be gone.
But guess what? If it's a good offensive line and they go to where he's going to be, he'll always have to go through.
But he stands out just because of his speed.
He's fast.
But, you know, you expected that because you kind of knew that's what you were getting beforehand. Chris Smith from Arkansas, about what you expected. Yep. I love his energy in practice.
Long arms, too.
Yeah, and big arms. Yep. I mean, the guy.
But he's 6 foot. He better have long arms.
Yeah, he's a little taller than that. He's a little taller than that.
6'1", I think.
Yeah,
is he 6'1"?
6'1", 6'2", 266.
He was listed at 6'3" in Fayetteville, by the way. But all of a sudden, no, that ain't 6'1".
Tony, you got to look
thick.
At this guy.
I saw him.
He looks like Greg Jones.
No, I agree. He's thick.
I mean, he's just wow.
I thought he was good looking. The way he came off the corner, I was impressed. I mean, there's no pads, though.
No, and the other defensive guys, they got a guy, I'm trying to remember his name, and I wish I had the list in front of me, free agent. Cornerback that looked pretty good, has got a chance.
The safety.
Reynolds from
Rashad Reynolds.
Reynolds from Oregon State.
What was the safety's name that made
And they signed a couple of guys that were workout players. Bo Blankenship's the running back, the safety Jerome
Rudy.
Jr.
Rudy. Blankenship is Rudy.
That's right.
And Junior.
Jerome Jr.
He looked pretty good.
Winston-Salem State. And they played at UConn and then transferred down to Winston-Salem.
And then I'll say this, Storm Johnson. I know he had fumble problems. And wasn't there some off-the-field issues? Is that why he
– At the U,
UCF?
At Miami.
At Miami, and then he went to UCF. Yes. He looked pretty good. He has a little bit of juice, the way he runs the ball. And, I mean, no pads again, but, man, he looks pretty good. But there's a reason you slide down that far.
Well, he had ball security issues.
Got a lot of fumbles.
Got some issues. So, you know, that's why you get drafted in the seventh round. You know, one of the guys I want to add, just one more guy, the quarterback from Miami. He's an athletic guy.
Stephen Morris?
Yeah.
So pretty
it's going to be intriguing.
Ball. Pretty deep ball, one hop, some short ones.
Well, he got the deep balls.
He got the deep balls. Hey, Jeff, did
you got a report on him, though.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
Exactly right. The Storm Johnson, going back to the ball security you mentioned, mm-hmm. It was funny Saturday, and I don't know if it was the same Friday, but Gus Bradley chirping, ball security, high and tight, high and tight, yeah. whole time.
It's one camp in, rookie mini camp, 2 days on the field, and that's what you glean from that. We'll take a break. Join John Osher and me for Jaguars.com Live every Wednesday afternoon, 12:30. We'll have special guests keep you informed with the latest Jags news and take your social media questions and phone calls. Jaguars.com Live every Wednesday at 12:30 on Jaguars.com. When we return, Cecil Shorts III joins us via the phone line. It's Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
We're back. Nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. JP Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Baselli, elected into the College Football Hall of Fame today.
Thank you.
Jaguars Thursday. I didn't say congrats.
I just said you were elected. Thank you. I like saying thank you.
Okay. Let's go to the phone lines. Welcome in Jaguars wide receiver Cecil Shorts III. Cecil, every time I see you, it's on a billboard somewhere now. What's going on?
I don't know nothing about that.
Oh, yeah, you do. Not only is it billboards, but Cecil, we're seeing you on billboards, buses. I mean,
you're drinking milk?
Yeah.
You got the milk mustache?
I'm the kids, man.
Oh, it's all about the kids.
Hey, I let me tell you, though. You look good. You look good. On the billboards. I mean, obviously, there was a lot of makeup involved, but you look good on the billboards. Yeah.
No makeup. I go out natural.
Okay. Cecil Shorts III is with us. Cecil, let's start off with your health. Of course, last season, banged up. You had the sports hernia surgery in the off season. Is it coming back strong? Are you healthy now? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm feeling coming back real strong. Probably like around 95, very close to 100%. Running without pain, which is the biggest thing. I was struggling with that all year last year. Probably this time last year, up until I had the surgery, I was struggling with, you know, just running with pain and getting through it. But I'm feeling really good right now, and I'm excited about the season.
When did you know that you had something going on with that last year?
We thought it was a growing strain through OTAs and through training camp. And they were trying to take care of me or whatnot, but it wouldn't go away. And after week one, the second half of the Kansas City game, my leg, like, shut down. Like, I couldn't really push off of it. It's just not strong. And I started getting some pain in my testicle area. And after the game, that's when I started thinking, like, if a growing strain is not going to be in your testicles.
Hey, Cecil, you just said testicles twice in one interview.
Fair, that's big.
I'm glad you used
it. It is what it is.
I'm glad you used the medical term. Nicely done.
I'm trying. You said bring your A game, right?
Bring your A game.
Well done.
You got it. Keep going.
So, So right around week one, I figured it was something past that. Then we just, you know, our whole goal was just to, you know, try to help our team just play. So I'm trying to push through the season. As the season goes on, it gets a little worse and worse. Around week seven, I kind of figured it was a sports hernia. I think it's right before the London week. And then, you know, we're like, we're going to play as long as we can. And that short week of Thursday night, we beat Cleveland. And then we came back Thursday night and came in against Houston at home. And that short week, it was a long pass Chad threw that we barely missed on. And that was it. Reached out for it. And I gave it my all. And then that was it. Kind of like gave out completely. And that was about it for the season. We think week 14.
See, so how frustrating was it for you because of the injury? You knew it. Obviously, Gus and the trainers and Dave knew it. But really, that was about it. I mean, knowing that you're out there not being able to go 100%, not be able to give your best and really perform at the level you want to.
It was very frustrating. Like you said, not to be able to give your best. You know what I mean? It's sitting there. I can't, you know, it's just frustrating. You can't, you know, break tackles like you want to, or even explode like you want to, or run like you want to, jump the whole 9 yards. And it affects everything, how you run, how you think. And I'm thinking more about my injury than playing. It was very frustrating last year, the whole year. Like I said, as the weeks went on, it got worse. But I think the trainers did a good job of keeping me as healthy as I can be throughout the year. Not lasted, you know, that long.
Jaguars Thursday, Cecil Shorts III joining us via the phone line. Let's move on to now. Of course, after the draft, the Jaguars have two new wide receivers, Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson. How's your interaction been with the two, and what do you think of the two guys so far?
Well, it's been fun being around them. You know, Marquise is a cool guy. Same thing with Allen. They're both hungry. They both want to be very good. And they continue to ask questions in meetings, ask questions on the field. And you can definitely see their talent just, you know, doing routes on air and stuff like that. They're very talented. And with Marquise, I was surprised that he didn't go in the first round. I mean, he was had a great job in his sophomore year at USC, 1,700-something yards, and then he had a few injuries. But, you know, I was surprised he didn't go first round. So when he dropped, I figured he was going to get him. But when we add a big guy like Allen Robinson, you know, that's kudos to Dave and Gus for doing their homework and bringing a big guy like that. That's something that we didn't have in the past. Since I've been here, a real big guy can go up and get the ball. So I'm excited to have both of them on the field.
So prior to the draft, were you a double agent?
What you mean?
Okay. I'm gonna explain myself here, because you and Blake Bortles have the same agent, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And you're also, you know, a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars football team. So were you working it from the Blake Bortles side or the Dave Caldwell side, or were you a double agent and working both sides to try to get Blake Bortles here in Jacksonville?
I wasn't working anything, you know what I mean? I was going to let things play how they play. I met him a couple times in the off season, and I worked out with him. We played catch. I wasn't really running then, but he was, you know, doing his workout with Jordan Palmer out in California, and I was out there for a week. And, you know, I did just caught some balls from him, and, you know, we hooked up a couple times. But, you know, I had nothing to do with that process. But I am excited that he's here. I'm very excited. I think he'll be good for our future.
Well, the picture, though, just gave me the impression. You know, double agent, Cecil Shorts, you know.
Hey, Cecil, back to the receivers real quick. You're going to be the veteran in that room, the leader. Those two young guys, both second-round picks, you talk about how hungry they are. How high a level – what's the competition level going to be in that room now, adding those two young guys?
Man, it's going to be fun. It's going to be competing every single day with those two guys. And then you got some – you bring a guy like Allen Hurns, who knows the offense, you know, being with Jeff Fish in college. You bring a guy like Copeland, who, you know, played very well at Louisville. And then you already got guys in the room like Mike Brown and Ace that contributed last year. And you got young guys like Bumpus and Lamar Taylor. Lamar – I don't know if the last name is Taylor
Thomas,
or not. But
Lamar Thomas.
Lamar Thomas, I'm sorry, and then Kerry Taylor, I mix them up, who made some plays last year. So it's going to be very competitive each day in each practice. So it'll be a lot of fun. They'll bring the best out of everybody. The cream will rise to the crop, you know what I mean? And Gus is real good about, you know, make sure everybody get reps at practice, so everybody get a fair chance at making the team and getting better. And also, you know, of course, we'll get the film out there so all the 32 teams can see But it's going to be very, very competitive.
Well, I'm glad you brought up those two guys, you know, obviously Hearn from Miami and also Copeland from Louisville, because, I mean, these two guys are good wide receivers in their own right, even though they were undrafted. To change the subject to a guy that was here, Justin Blackmon. The coach and Dave Caldwell talked about him, saying they don't expect to have him around this year. Obviously, you developed a friendship with Justin in over the last couple of years. Have you heard from him at all?
Honestly, I have not heard from him. I reached out to him a couple of times. You know, no response. Well, actually, more than a couple of times, but no response from him. I did talk to one of his roommates that he was staying with. He said he's doing well in Oklahoma, and that he's doing fine, but I have not talked to him, you know. The best thing I can do right now is just hope and pray he's doing well. You know, hope to see him again soon.
Cecil Shorts III is joining us on Jaguars Thursday. Finally, Cecil, where are you right now? Do I hear drums in the background? Like there's wind going
he's on?
He's on a commercial shoot.
I'm at the Trinity versus Rain spring game.
Why don't you come check out the Providence? Right, why don't you come check out the Providence spring game tonight, Cecil?
I didn't know about the Providence spring game.
7 o'clock, baby.
I had no clue.
7 o'clock. I'll be heading out there.
I might slide over there. I have nothing else to do. So, but yeah, Trinity got some guys. You know, they got the top DB in the nation.
Oh, yeah.
I think going to LSU, I believe. And they got, you know, a bunch of other guys. So I want to come check them out and see how I go. But I definitely might go check out Providence.
All right, last question, and we'll let you go watch some high school football, Cecil. The report kind of popped up, I guess, a week or so ago that there was conversation going on between your agent and the Jaguars about a contract extension. Anything to report there?
Nothing to report until you know when I know. So. All I know is, you know, I need to go out here, compete, continue to get better, you know, be durable, play a whole season. You know, if the way I see it, if you play good, you know, a team will pay good. So I'm not too worried about it. Just gonna go out there and compete.
Cecil Shorts III joining us on the phone. Enjoy the high school football. We'll see you at OTAs next week, Cecil.
Thank you, Cecil.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Cecil Shorts III.
Yeah, I believe that was the first time ever on Jaguars radio that the term testicle was used.
Twice.
Multiple times.
Twice in like 15 seconds. I was blown away. I mean, the first time I was like, did he just say testicle? And then he said it right again. It was beautiful.
That's enough of that. Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Crown Royal Maple Whiskey. Started Maple finished. When we return, a look at headlines around the National Football League this week. League meetings are in Atlanta. And some notes from around the AFC South. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
We're back. Go long in the fuel-efficient Ford Fusion. See your Southern Ford dealer today. Proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. Jaguars Thursday rolls along. The phone lines are open. 355-NFL1, 355-6351. J.P. Shadrick with Jeff Lagerman. Final couple of minutes with Tony Baselli in studio. You got to go to Providence football tonight.
Yeah, I'm happy to get on the phone, you know, if you need any expert analysis, especially about high school football.
We'll get right on that.
Well, Cecil, sure. We can get Cecil to give us a breakdown of the Reigns game.
Yeah,
so.
Hey, we can have correspondence all over town.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah.
Let's go around the National Football League. Big news this week. More than 500 former players have joined what could become a class action lawsuit against the league, claiming the league supplied NFL players with illegally prescribed painkillers throughout their careers. Tony, I know you were on Colin Cowherd today discussing this topic. Jeff, I know you have some thoughts about this topic, too. Is this over the top again, like a concussion like you thought? Or what's the story, Tony?
I'll just get my opinion. I disagree with it. I mean, the notion and what I've heard players say, they were misled, talking about injuries and long-lasting effects, and then taking pain pills, that pain pills were pushed on them and have led to them being addictive and addictive behaviors and so on and so forth. Played here 7 years, 1 year in Houston. I was never in a situation where anything was pushed on me. I will speak for myself and myself only. I was the one asking for it. In the NFL, it is a dangerous sport. you get injured, you get beat up, you have aches and pains. And every one of us wants to be on the field. Everyone understands that you have to fight through things. If you want to have sustainability in this league, you have to play through tough moments. And all of us want to be at the highest level that we possibly can. And we all knew the risk. We knew that the day we started playing football, there was going to be lasting effects to our bodies for the rest of our lives. And we all signed the dotted line, signed up for it, were paid handsomely, and took pain pills, took shots, did what we had to do to get on the field. And so we agreed to it. At some point, the players, and it's the same thing with the concussion lawsuit to me, there has to be some responsibility by the players, and there has to even be more responsibility by the union. If this was such a fraudulent, conspiracy, sinister act, where was the union? The union is the one who should be standing up. Everyone knew about it. This was not done behind closed doors. Every player knew about it. The union knew about it. Everyone knew what guys did to get on the field. If it was so bad, why didn't the union step up?
What do you think, Jeff?
When I was 21, 22, 23 years old, 24 years old, you couldn't tell me anything.
No way. Me too.
You couldn't tell me anything. You couldn't persuade me to do anything, because I would, at that point in my life, I'd be willing to give up years on the end of my life to be able to play in games.
That's right.
Now, look, I'm sure that there are instances that have happened in the history of the league to where drugs probably shouldn't have been given to certain guys in the style or fashion that they were given to them. But the problem that I have with this, much like I do with the concussion issue, is that when you start talking class action, it gets the feeling of a big money grab. And it takes away the attention from, I think, certain situations that really deserve that attention. Because what you'll have with this is that all of a sudden guys will start throwing their names on it. And just because they hope to get a little money out of it. You know,
devil's advocate here. If you had an addiction issue and were having painkillers all the time and couldn't get off of it, and you felt it started back at that time, would you have a different view?
No. Well, you made the decision. I mean, my goodness.
You bring up a point, though, that I think is very different. And that, you're talking about an addiction in which, a doctor was giving it to you and giving it to you and giving it to you and giving it to you.
Well, that's how deep, this can be.
Well, that to me, that's a legitimate issue.
Right.
But the problem, I think, is that a lot of what will be jumping into this class action lawsuit won't be like that. Much like the concussion.
I'm sure there are players that are struggling with it.
Though. But most of the time, in my opinion, and maybe there are cases where there were negligent doctors. Go sue the doctor then. That's the doctor. That's why they have malpractice insurance. That's why doctors get sued all the time. There's bad doctors in every line. But most of the time, when you get addicted to something, you're conniving, figuring out the system to get as many pills as you possibly can. It's not exactly the same, but it's no different than tobacco. People suing the tobacco companies for getting addicted, for getting cancer for smoking or chewing. I mean, come on, you all know it's bad for you. It says
I was addicted to adrenaline, and that adrenaline came on Sundays.
I agree.
And I was willing to do whatever it took.
I'm with you, Jeff.
To play. And it didn't matter. Shoot me here, shoot me there, give me this, give me that. Didn't matter. I'll take it.
And here's the other problem I have. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Colin Coward who brought it up. Remember 3 or 4 years ago when Jay Cutler hurt his knee and took himself out in the playoff game, and he got ripped and
absolutely
he was soft and is not tough. And a lot of the players, now a number of the players who are now listed on this lawsuit, were on the record in interviews saying he's not man, he's not tough, he should have done whatever it took to get on the field.
He should have.
I agree. But Jeff, you can't say that and then sue the league for doing whatever it took to get you on the field. You don't get it both ways. Boys, when you sign up, when you make that decision, when you ask for it, when you go in and say, give me what it takes to get on the field, you take on responsibilities. There are inherent risks with playing the game of football, just like a lot of different jobs, JP. And when you sign up, you're part of it now.
There's risk to being a broadcaster, too, working with you two guys.
Yeah, you can get knocked out at any time.
But I know what I'm getting into.
You do.
I think I know. This is my second show. I might not know.
You're across the table from me. You're all right.
You might quit.
Might. Tony, I know you got to run.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to go coach a little offensive line for the Providence Stallions tonight.
Don't mess them up.
Oh, it's too late. It's way too late for that, Jeff.
New College Football Hall of Famer Tony Buscelli.
Hey, guys, great. I will be out of town next week, but I'm going to be on the phone with you guys, so I'll catch up on a couple segments next week when I'm out of town on vacation.
Sounds great. Congrats, right, Tony. Tony Buscelli joining us. Jeff, we'll continue this. The league meetings were in Atlanta this week.
Right. Congratulations meetings. To Minneapolis.
Yeah, Super Bowl 52 in the new stadium. They're going to play in TCF Bank Stadium, home of the Golden Gophers, the next 2 years. And then they'll move into the new place, which was on the site of the Metrodome, as the second ever Super Bowl in Minneapolis. What do you think?
I'm excited for Minneapolis because I know that when the Washington Redskins played, I think it was in the Super Bowl in Minneapolis years ago, right? I think the first one in Minneapolis?
Yeah, it's been a while.
But, I mean, they have ways of dealing with the snow in Minneapolis. I mean, people are like, oh, it's going to be a blizzard. It's going to be cold. These people live up in that all the time. It's not a big deal.
The concern, though, is for sponsors that come in from out of town that want to entertain, right?
They have snow plows, okay,
in Minnesota. Well, they have walkways from building to building, too.
That don't go outside. It's going to be okay.
It's not South Beach.
Congratulations to Minneapolis. They were a great host before. It's a wonderful city. I think they'll do magnificent. And, hey, look, the reality of it is that if you build a new stadium, a nice new stadium, you've got a really good chance of getting the Super Bowl. And for those people that disagree with that, tough. That's the way the ball bounces in real life.
And don't forget, the scoreboards here at Everbank Field, there's the drawings of the concept of the roof here at Everbank Field. If all that were to happen at some point in the future, this place might be back in the discussion.
Could be. And that's why Miami and New Orleans aren't going to be in the mix. I mean, those stadiums, I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying that they're not up to the standards that the NFL expects.
Sure.
You know, and how in the world does Miami Stadium, which is not that old, fall into a state of disrepair like it has? I mean, to me, that's shocking. Absolutely shocking.
Let's not get into a stadium bashing debate tonight. We'll save that for another night.
Okay.
Other news from the league meetings this week. Roger Goodell says he expects playoff expansion in 2015, not this year. He says the league needs to focus on the expanded Thursday night football package that's on CBS and NFL Network.
No,
your thoughts on the expansion?
It's not them looking and letting the focus be on the Thursday night package.
Right.
The reality of it is that is a collective bargaining issue. They're going to need to talk to the union because that is a change of work conditions. And I'm sure they will work it out.
Do you like it as a player? Or playoff bonus money?
I like it now because it means that I get more football to watch. I'm good with that.
As a player, though, would you vote yes to that?
As a player, and the purist in me says no. It lessens the importance of the regular season. You know, so I'm conflicted about it. I mean, I really am. I mean, I like it and I don't. You know, so I'm on the fence. You know, pull me one way or the other, and I'll be on your side, JP. What do you think? Do you like it?
I love it.
Okay.
Why not?
I'm with you.
Playoff bonus
like
for
it.
Everybody. Pay everybody. Go ahead. Well, that's why you should like it, right?
Well,
and you have a chance. More teams have a chance to win.
Well, there's no question.
If you're in the league,
that adding additional teams into the playoffs will add a significant amount more money to the pool because the ratings
through the roof
for playoff NFL football is fantastic, and that means they'll get big dollars for it with the expanded playoffs. But we'll see.
We'll take a timeout on Jaguars Thursday. When we come back, we'll look around the AFC South, some highlights from each team in the division this week. We'll wrap up Jaguars Thursday also and look towards next week's OTAs. Visit Jaguars.com and check out Inside the Jaguars, driven by Tom Bush. Get caught up in all the latest Jaguars news and a chance to win the ultimate Jags game day experience. More Jaguars Thursday after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Final segment of Jaguars Thursday. Phone lines are open tonight, 355-NFL1, 355-6351, 1-800 in front of it if you're out of the area. Ladies, the Jaguars Women's Club, presented by Steinmart and Culligan, created with a female Jaguars fan in mind. Members receive VIP treatment that includes custom membership kits, exclusive opportunities, and a forum to stay connected with the Jags and other club members through Facebook and exciting events. For more information, go to jaguars.com/womensclub and note the NFL 101 event coming up in mid-October. More information coming soon from Michaela Bradley. It was a big event, logs the other night here. The cleats and cocktails. And the West Touchdown Club.
That's
the first
a cool,
event.
That's a great name, by
it
the way.
It was fantastic.
Cleats and cocktails. What was that about?
Over 300 members of the Women's Club were there, and Gus and Michaela Bradley spoke. Four players were up on the stage, played a password game, chocolate, wine. J.P. Shadrick was there. It was fantastic. What a night.
Boy, that's shocking. A women's event, J.P. Shadrick shows up.
How about that? So join the Jaguars Women's Club for sure. Hey, let's go around
did,
the...
Did you join?
No, I did not. Thanks. Very nice. Let's go around the AFC South this week. Busy week in the AFC South. We start in Houston, where wide receiver Andre Johnson has wondered on record if Houston's still the place for him after the 2-14 record a year ago. Now he's on the record. He won't be at OTA starting next week. They're voluntary anyway, but... This is a pretty bad sign for Houston, right, Jeff?
I don't think it's a bad sign. I mean, he's a veteran guy. Does he need OTAs, even though it's a new system and a new coaching staff? No, not necessarily. But I think he'd like to have him there to kind of set the tempo. But he's obviously not happy about something. I don't know if he's not happy about the contract situation. Is it a quarterback situation?
Because he ran off the field last year, right?
A coaching situation. You don't know. You don't know. Does he have a problem with ownership, the way they dealt with something? Does he have a problem with Rick Smith, the general manager? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. But I do know one thing. He is not a young man anymore. And I think the older you get, the more mature you need to be. And I'm not saying that Maurice Jones-Drew didn't handle things the right way here at the end, but I think he could have handled it better. And I think with Johnson, I think he can handle it better than what he's doing.
He's no spring chicken. I mean, he's still performing.
He's still making a lot of money.
Absolutely.
Hey, look. The window is so short to play in the National Football League. If you want out, then I'm sure he's already communicated that fact to the Houston Texans. Then if not, and he's just being kind of quiet about everything, grow up, you know? Speak your mind, let them know how you feel, and move on.
A couple of nuggets from Indianapolis for the Colts this week. Robert Mathis gets a 4-game suspension for a violation of the league's drug policy. He claims a fertility drug, and he'll miss the Week 3 meeting in Jacksonville against the Jaguars. Do you buy that?
Do
fertility?
I buy it? Or
does it matter?
The way his agent laid it out, in that he took it as a fertility aid, so that him and his wife could have a child, which they did.
Yes.
So it obviously worked. You know, that makes you feel sympathetic towards Robert Mathis. He's one of my favorite players in the National Football League. I mean, really. I mean, the guy's got a great motor. He's very respectful about the game. I liked him more than Dwight Freeney for many years. And you know, in fact, me and Tony used to argue. He said, "You're crazy. You know, I'd much rather have to block Robert Mathis if I was still playing than Dwight Freeney." And I get that. But, I mean, Robert Mathis to me was the epitome of professionalism. But the league, there is no room for interpretation of their rules when it comes to the drug testing.
Very clear.
Very clear. Robert Mathis ultimately is responsible for what he puts in his body. He has to have a list to have his doctor check it. So the responsibility falls on Robert.
Led the league in sacks 19.5 a year ago. Other news from Indy this week, Jim Irsay back in the fold. He was in the draft room on draft night. He was at the owners' meetings in Atlanta this week. They say no punishment from the league until something happens in terms of the legal system. Should there be some type of punishment?
Sure,
for
sure. I mean, he's got felony charges against him. Irsay has been a mess for a while. This is not a surprise. I mean, Nobody's shocked. Oh my gosh, this guy was in the closet. Nobody knew that he used to use drugs or alcohol. I mean, this is not the first rodeo for Irsay. You know, and I think the commissioner's got to set an example. And I think he's got to set an example mainly because if he doesn't set an example, then I think he's going to lose some respect from the players as a whole. Because the commissioner has been very hard on players over the last number of years.
You bet he has.
And if he doesn't come down on an owner equally or harder than he has the players, Roger Goodell will lose a lot of respect.
Let's finish off the AFC South with the Tennessee Titans. Quarterbacks everywhere. Locker, Mettenberger in the sixth round this year. Whitehurst is still around from Clemson. It's been a while. Tyler Wilson, fourth-round pick of the Raiders last year. Highest draft pick last year to not make the team in the league. Was signed by Tennessee in December. A lot of quarterbacks who comes to the top.
Which means you don't have a good one.
That's right.
That's kind of how it is, you know.
Seems like it's been like that for a while in Tennessee.
Well, Jake Locker is going to be the guy. I mean, he's going to get this year and going to have a great opportunity to prove to the Tennessee Titans that he can be the man. He's also going to have an opportunity to prove it to everybody else around the National Football League because they did not pick up the option, which is very expensive for a guy that hasn't performed at a very high level. And he has injury history. I expect that he'll play the entire year, that they'll allow Mettenberger to develop, see what he is, see how Locker does, and then kind of make a decision from there. But when you have a lot of quarterbacks, it means you don't have one.
You don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, that's right.
There's your look around the AFC South. Let's move on towards next week, Jeff. The Jaguars will be on the field. OTA practices begin, the first of 10 practices on the schedule. One of those is open to the public. Not next week, but the week after. We'll get to that a little later. But on the field, it's voluntary. Veterans will be back on Tuesday on the field. Jeff, and what do you expect this week?
Well, I expect the tempo to be a lot faster, you know, for the rookies than it was during the rookie minicamp, because once they get to the install, they're not slowing down for the rookies. I mean, the rookies have to just basically keep pace. And I like it better that way. But then you're also going to be able to take a look at the new guys and see them against veteran players. Now, look, I know the pads aren't going to be on, but that's okay. You know, you want to see these guys get acclimated in the system. And I was actually doing my calendar, kind of putting all these days in. You got three next week, another three the following week, that's another right. three. So it's basically for the next – and then you end up having the mandatory mini camp, which is June 17th, 18th, and 19th.
That's right.
You know, so – this is going to be a busy, you know, four weeks, basically, for this football team. And it's your opportunity to get better, and it's basically your last opportunity prior to training camp. And it's also a great time to really establish an expectation level for the rookies, because rookies aren't accustomed to having a certain amount of time off until they come back for training camp. In college, typically, you have summer school, you know, that you train and everything else and work out right up till you start camp. These guys are going to have a certain period of time off. And then by letting them figure out at what level a professional is expected to be conditioned at will be good for them so that they come back, they're ready to rock and
roll.
They'll
find out in a hurry. Tuesday, May 27th, Wednesday, May 28th, Thursday, May 29th, all closed to the public. We'll have more details on Jaguars.com about coverage. It will be written coverage, locker room open to media every day after practice. But stay tuned for more for that. The only open to the public practice during OTAs, mark it down, Thursday, June 5th. Open to the public, 11:25 to 1:25 at the Florida Blue practice fields. And if the crowd during the rookie minicamp was any indication, even on a Thursday, that should be a jam-packed affair.
You know what really, I mean, first of all, I mean, great job, fans. I mean,
it was awesome.
It was awesome. But, you know, you had to pre-register.
You still have to do that again this time.
No, I know. But that you would think that would kind of maybe scare some people off.
Absolutely.
It didn't. Nope. You know, it made people get excited about it. I think that's great. You know, shoot. I wish we had 6,000 open a minicamp. But, you know, I like it, you know, because, first of all, teams don't have to do that. You know, the Jaguars don't have to do that. And a lot of coaches are totally against anything like that. I've always liked it. Because the more pressure that you can create for your football team, which, hey, you play in front of fans on game day, the more pressure that you can create in the offseason, the more attention, et cetera, I think the better it is for getting the best out of your athletes and seeing what the best is out of them.
This portion of Jaguars Thursday was brought to you by Fanatics.com. That's it for Jaguars Thursday. Our thanks to Joe Fortunato, our producer extraordinaire. Tony Boselli, new College Football Hall of Fame electee, I guess is the word for it. And for Jeff Lagerman, J.P. Shadrick. That's it for Jaguars Thursday. We'll see you next week.